Aquí habla Marta Martínez, acupunturista de Stay in Touch. Está oyendo a Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, Northampton.
This is Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Thanks for tuning in today. Also with me in the studio today is Dwayne Rainey.
In person.
On last week's show, I talked with Eli Damon about risk and statistics. Well, I have a statistic for you today. Yesterday, I turned 41. You know, birthdays are good for you.
Oh, happy birthday.
Birthdays are good for you because statistics show that the more you have, the longer you live.
All right.
Okay, so today's show, first I have a 10-minute clip of my friend Paige sharing about the Wovel. That's a wheeled snow shovel. And then the rest of the show will be clips from recent discussions in Northampton about racism, from last Thursday's city council meeting, from Monday's Martin Luther King Day panel at Edwards Church, and then some person on the street interviews that I did randomly downtown this morning. Here's Paige woveling. Paige, can you tell me about the snow removal equipment in your backyard?
This is a snow wovel, W-O-V-E-L. And this is a tool that is a shovel plow that is human powered. I just sing the praises of this tool. I find it to be incredibly easier than shoveling in a lot of contexts. Ergonomically, it's designed so that you're never twisting. You know, this is one of the things with shoveling.
Yeah.
Where you are simultaneously lifting a heavy load and you're twisting your body to the side and dumping it. That is a lot of work. Our bodies don't do well with that kind of work. With the Wovel, you use
you
the
describe,
handle.
Describe
yes,
what
let me
like
tell
this.
Your listening audience what this thing looks like. Okay, so this is like imagine a big plastic snow shovel. That's what's down on the ground.
About 2 feet wide?
It's 24 inches, yep, two feet. And then there is a handle that extends from there all the way up to handlebars.
And that's about and 5 feet long?
I think it's about 5 feet long. And in between is a large wheel. This is probably a little bit larger than a bike wheel.
I'd say about 2.5 feet in diameter.
Yeah. So a lot of what makes this possible is that wheel. And there are different ways that you can use the Wovel.
So the wheel is thin, like a bike wheel.
Yes.
Only like an inch and a half wide.
The whole thing is very lightweight.
Yeah, okay. The wheel's it's a plastic wheel with the rubber, solid rubber around
it. Yes. So a lot of what you can do is lift up a heavy load of snow. And when I say lift, I mean pushing down.
Because the wheel is your axis.
Yes. The wheel is at the fulcrum. Is it? Would you say that that's a fulcrum?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And so you go along and you pick up some snow. And this is it's kind of old snow. These are not ideal conditions. And you push down on the handlebars. You've got this load, and it just doesn't feel heavy or anything. And then you can wheel it to where you want to dump it.
Okay. So you push down on the handlebars, and it lifts the snow up off the ground.
That's right. The shovel at the front of the Wovel now has a heavy load of snow. And I am going to take it, I think I'll take it right over here, and then push down with a little bit of kind of quickness, like that. And the snow has just bounced off out of the shovel and into the place where I wanted to put it.
Just like tossing it with a little bump by pushing down?
Yes, you kind of bump. That's a really good way of calling it. It's like a bump with your hands down that lifts the shovel up and ejects the snow to wherever you want it. So here's an example. I can kind of do another little batch. Lift it up. And right now, where I want to put it is right next to it. But rather than tipping it like I would if it were a snow shovel, I am just turning the wheel
on its axis,
pivoting the wheel, and then bumping the snow out. Pushing it again, and bumping it out. This is immeasurably faster than shoveling. Let's say, for example, city sidewalks. In the recent most storm, I shoveled a lot of the sidewalks along North Street, the northern end of North Street, and was able to clear those sidewalks in a fraction of the time it would take any one of those homeowners to do their portion. I really believe that this can be used in that kind of context very efficiently, mm-hmm. and saving a lot of people's discs. It's not effective in really, really deep snow, but I would say up to something like 5 inches. And you can also skim. I've done that before. Last year there was a massive storm. I was living out in Williamsburg. I had a huge driveway, and I no longer had a contract with a plow removal service. And I had been up all night, going out every 2 hours or so and woveling. This is not for every application. Another context that I've found that it's not so useful, where there is a path that is really narrow, that's narrower than the 24 inches. You know, the other day when there was a snow, I did this section from Northern Ave to Bates, and there were maybe 2 inches of snow, and it was barely different from walking,
yeah.
in terms of amount of time, yeah. and in terms of effort.
Yeah.
There was very little effort involved.
Yeah.
Part of why this is easier is because of its ergonomic design. Part of why it's easier is because it goes so much quicker.
Yeah.
It is much faster than the repeated movement of shoveling. And because it goes so easily, it is enjoyable. So it is like going for a walk.
When I look at this thing, in a way it reminds me of those old toys. It used to be like a stick with some sort of a... Isn't there a toy like a stick with a fork or something and you push a wheel along in front of it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's if you try to balance the wheel as you push it down the sidewalk.
Yeah. You know, that's a good way of kind of describing what this looks like, maybe.
Or the joy that could be had in pushing a wheel down the sidewalk.
The joy that can be had. And I've seen a lot of joy on the faces of people driving by. And even people standing there with their cell phones taking videos of this woovel in action. And
so tell me, where did you hear about it? And then where did you get it? Where can people
get it? I can't remember how I heard about it. This will be my third winter. And I was living out in Williamsburg at my mom's place, and she had a contract with a guy to come anytime there was like the slightest amount of snow. And I convinced her that we could use that money to buy this tool, and then I could just do it. She said, okay. She had dementia. And so I got this thing. Just used it for the last 2 winters exclusively and just found that this is really fabulous. So I bought it online. I tried to find it locally and couldn't find it anywhere. And now I'm living in town, and the place where I live doesn't really call for such a big thing. And yet there are places where I use it. And then definitely in my neighborhood. I've really enjoyed doing the sidewalks in the neighborhood. And a couple of weeks ago, I did a trial run on the bike path of doing a woovel's width from Bates to the end of the bike path bridge, there was about 5 inches of snow. It was pretty deep. So it was a big challenge, and I wasn't able to accomplish all that I had hoped. I wasn't able to kind of do a second width on the way back. Mm-hmm. And it was on top of, I was wobbling on top of ice. Mm-hmm. So what I exposed was an inch of ice, and I just thought, that'll melt. You know, it'll have more exposure to the sun. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's, you can tell it, something happened there, but it's pretty much a channel that collects, you know, the melt of the rest of the bike path and turns into ice. So it wasn't completely ideal, but I believe that with some more people using it and certain areas of the bike path are more important than others. I liked the idea of doing Bates across the bridge because the bridge is just important. A lot of people use it. I know people who bike from Hadley. I don't think those are the most actively used portions of the bike path, but if they were to be wobbled more frequently, it would be possible to keep a really decent width open on both the bridge and that portion of the bike path. And then also, I read on the Snow Squad website that certain on and off ramps to the bike path aren't plowed by the city. So this would be a good thing to use, like at Jackson Street, behind Stop and Shop at the end of State Street. And there was one other mention. Oh, I believe it was a Dare place. Yeah. This would be ideal to use in those contexts. People's driveways and sidewalks. I think the city sidewalk thing is really a good thing. My neighbor over here is elderly, and she has the most city sidewalk of anybody in the neighborhood, along Northern Ave and North Street. And I think the Wovel is the answer. You know, and I can go and just do that in a short amount of time.
Thank you, Paige.
That was Paige Bridgens talking about her snow clearing tool called the Wovel, a snow shovel with a wheel. I think there's a website. You can go to a website and find out more about it. Dwayne has an announcement to share with people.
Yeah, I got two of them here, and they both say fun, fun, fun. I mean, is that more fun than just fun? We'll start with St. Francis International Living Community presents the International Potluck. Anything you bring will be international. In a silent auction with door prizes and international music, including Zouk from West Africa. This is Saturday, January 24th, this Saturday from 5:30 to 8:30. At the Haydenville Congregational Church on Route 9, Haydenville. It says, get ready to have fun, fun, fun again. And there's just one thing that they say is for what whenever you bring food, to list the ingredients. 100% of the money will help Adams Community refugees from the war over diamonds in Sierra Leone.
That's the St. Francis International Laughing Community.
Any questions?
You can call Francesca at 413-586-5881.
I'm going to do the other fun, fun, fun?
Why don't we save some fun for later?
Okay.
Okay, so the next series of clips I have is they're from last week's city council meeting that I attended. There were about 75 people packed in the room for that meeting, and many people came to continue the community discussion on racism that's been going on particularly strongly for the last several months.
Just some background. On November 25th, there was a Black Lives Matter rally in downtown Northampton to raise awareness and a call for action for racial justice, particularly related to killing of black people by white police officers. City Councilor Lisa Klein spoke at the rally and highlighted some injustices and called for action. In the weeks following that, there were a couple of guest editorials in the Gazette, one by a retired police officer, another by the head of the police union, saying that Councillor Klein's comments were inappropriate and they incited people against the police. This city council meeting is from Thursday, January 15th, 2015. The first speaker is City Council President Bill Dwight, describing the public comment ground rules.
We ask that you limit your remarks to 3 minutes or under. Don't feel obliged to meet that 3 minute mark, except don't go over it, please. Anyone can speak on any topic. It doesn't have to be on the agenda. You don't have to be a resident of Northampton. The object is to hear from everyone. Now, given the amount of people that have signed up tonight, we could be here for a long time. Oh, and another thing is that according to our rules, the council is constrained from speaking. We will not engage in a back and forth. This is the public's opportunity to speak to power for the board such as we are.
I'm Natalia Munoz. I'm the chair of the Human Rights Commission, but I'm speaking as a private citizen. And the Human Rights Commission will bring this up as well. I think that what cops do is really hard work. They deal with the meanest people, the most violent people, people at their worst. They miss birthdays and anniversaries and all sorts of things, and they work, you know, every hour of the day. At the same time, I don't think that gives anybody the right to say, in this case, for instance, the city councilor, Alisa Klein, has no right to speak her mind about institutional racism. Institutional racism does exist. And everywhere, not just in the Northampton Police Department, every police department, every school department, every healthcare system. It's just institutional racism is everywhere. It's not a problem of the United States alone. It's a problem worldwide. So we have to address it. And I believe what we should do is have the city council and the mayor appoint a special commission comprised of people from the police department and the DA's office and organizations that work with communities of color and city councilors and other people from the community to come up with a list of recommendations so that what's happened in Ferguson, what's happened in Staten Island, what happened in Cleveland, what's happened in so many communities in this country for centuries does not happen in Northampton. Thank you very much.
Ann Hanna. Well, I cannot know what it feels like to wear a police uniform and the vulnerabilities that come with that. As a white person, I know what it means to have racial privilege. When I get called out on my racism, it is my responsibility to listen, apologize, reflect, and learn so that my future acts are ones that bring about racial harmony and justice.
The next speaker is Jeff Napolitano from American Friends Service Committee.
But I worry about a city in which the head of the police union denounces a city leader for stating what nearly every single person of color knows, that they have the added burden of having to teach their children about a double standard when it comes to police. That isn't the statement of a flaming radical. That's the statement echoed by our Attorney General, the President of the United States, and lived by pretty much every black person in this country. To those whose criticism of Councillor Klein was that the parade afterwards included protesters who shouted, F the police, I'll just say that that wasn't her responsibility. That expression, however vulgar, is the expression of those that were shouting it. We can say what we'd like about it, but the anger behind it exists, and I can't and won't apologize for that anger. There was much focus on the well-being of the officers in the street. What strikes me is that people of color in general are traumatized daily. Where is the outrage on their well-being? The double standard endured by people of color is simply factually irrefutable, and I think we should be talking more about that. Northampton is an overwhelmingly white city, and we've got an overwhelmingly white police force. This shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. It isn't an accident. There's a thread of systemic discrimination that runs through our society, so why can't we just admit that? Why can't we confront our flaws? No one is saying all police officers are racist, but we live in a racist society, so we're going to have instances of racism. Furthermore, the rally and Councillor Klein's comments, they weren't directed at the Northampton police. In her words, we as white folks must hold ourselves and those around us accountable when our humanity fails. We must work together to end the structures that allow and perpetuate racism. Councillor Klein was putting voice to the injustice that reigns in our society. She did it because it needs to be done, and we need leaders who are willing and able to call it out as they are. She wasn't inciting racism that night. She was heralding a call for justice, and for that, she shouldn't be alone. She should be joined by every city leader here, everyone in this room, and everyone who cares about the health of our society.
That was Jeff Napolitano from the AFSC.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Lynch, and I'm a Northampton resident. I was the person who encouraged people to march that night and led the march of over 700 people through downtown Northampton. I will come back to the city council for a minute and say that this city council is entirely white. As the first black woman to speak here tonight, I will say that there is a black community, there is a Latino community, there is an indigenous, and there is an Asian community that is part of Northampton that is not represented here right now. So I would like to say that, name that issue. And I would like to say that it is a base humanitarian effort of all people, and especially all white people, to decry white supremacy and racism, and that every 28 hours a black person is killed in this country by police or vigilantes. And when we march, it is named as violence. It is the responsibility of everyone who has any kind of moral capacity, and especially our leaders, to stand up and stand in solidarity with black and brown people as we lead the fight for our freedom and the fight to be able to walk down the street without wondering who will kill us with impunity and then incarcerate and humiliate and criminalize our name after our death. I will also say that as a black woman in Northampton, I have been profiled and stopped by the Northampton police multiple times, and that we are talking about systems of oppression, and white supremacy and racism are systems that we live under daily. So when people chant FTP, when people talk about police, we are talking about the systems of oppression that allow for a black person to be killed every 28 hours and allow there to be a need for discussion about whether or not it is morally okay to decry these assassinations and this genocide.
My name is Savannah Melissa Long. I'm actually from Amherst, and I want to read this. This is a poster from 1851. Caution, colored people of Boston, one and all, you are hereby respectfully cautioned and advised to avoid conversing with watchmen and police officers of Boston. For since the recent order of the mayor and aldermen, they are empowered to act as kidnappers and slave catchers, and they have already been actually employed in kidnapping, catching, and keeping slaves. Therefore, if you value your liberty and the welfare of your fugitive among you, shun them in every possible manner, so many hounds on the tracks of the most unfortunate of your race. Keep a sharp lookout for kidnappers and have top eye open. This is from 1851. This poster is still actually happening still now as a parent of a black child. The only difference is, instead of the word kidnappers, it's arrests. Instead of slaves, black and brown. And again, we're still targeted for even existing in the space of our cars, our streets, our job, our homes, our religion.
There was a man who interrupted the meeting. I'm just going to play a little clip of that.
How about calling the police?
Good evening. My name is Sadia Shevin. And I'm a resident of Ward 7 and voter. And I'm here in support of my counselor, Elisa Klein. I live at 8 Cosmian Avenue in Florence.
Did somebody call the police?
Yeah.
Hang on a second. Hold on. Would you be all right if I ask you to talk to him? This is what you do. Excuse me for a second.
I'd like to take up less than my 3 minutes, but also my colleague has signed up but has to leave early. Can he share the mic with me?
You want to jump him up on that?
Yeah. Sure.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are no motions for reconsideration in public speak time.
The theorist colleague who stepped up to the podium was Bill Newman, head of the Western Mass ACLU and a friend of Bill Dwight's.
Go right ahead.
So I'm Vera Cage, and I live in Amherst, and I can say, I can tell my address. It's I had to think about it because, sometimes when we speak, depending on the content, it may not be safe for us to go back home, or it may not be safe for our children to be there, depending upon the reactions of various community members. So we had one example earlier this meeting of someone shouting out, "N lover," to a speaker who spoke the truth, who spoke from her mind. And so that's the sort of terrorism that folks are confronted with and have to weigh. But for some others, you know, it's pretty resolute what we do with our lives and our energies and our commitment.
So the person that was yelling, he was sort of stomping his way out as this all happened. So there's the final speaker.
Yes, I rode my bicycle here. I now live at Village Hill.
This is Jasper Lipinski.
And thank you to the mayor for plowing the bike trails. So here's the thing. I plan to come and sort of angrily denounce the police, and I'll do that briefly. I think it's shameful that any police officer or police representative would say anything about their elected officials. Most people would get fired if they spoke that way about their boss. I plan to say happy things about Elisa Klein. I think she's a great city councilor. But something happened at the beginning of this meeting that I want to address. The person who caused a disturbance, he suffers severely from post-traumatic stress disorder. He's not a racist. He just sort of hates the world because he's in so much pain all the time. And if anyone's lives don't matter in our society, especially at the hands of the police, it's the mentally ill who are given drugs and not treatment. We should be careful about who we include, who we exclude. My take on that situation is that Ed felt that because he was not black, his victimization by, I don't know what police department, was not valued. And I think there's some truth to that. I don't support his behavior. I can't speak for it. But I wanted to address what happened since I have some information, and since I didn't feel that he was completely off the mark, even if his approach was.
So I was playing clips from last Thursday's city council meeting in Northampton. That was all from the public comment session, which lasted for 2 hours. Poor city councilors. It was 9 o'clock before the public comment session ended. And then I think Bill Dwight said they ended up meeting till like 12:30 in the morning. Whew. Anyway, you've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Valley Free Radio is WXOJLP Northampton, 103.3 FM, and also streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. Anything else you'd like to add, Dwayne?
We have some more fun, fun, fun. Yes. This should be really fun. Oh, we have more fun, 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 yes.
Let me have fun to turn your mic on.
Okay, thank you. She doesn't want me to speak. January 23rd, this is Friday at the Hinge in Northampton, Sylvia Johnson and Higher Help. And Sylvia is a good friend of mine, and she's got a terrific voice. So that's from 9 o'clock to midnight. It says, come on out. There's some R&B. She's got a beautiful voice, so I think that would be fun for anyone that wanted to go.
And a band to go with her. So, let's see. The next clips I have are from the Martin Luther King Day celebration Monday at Edwards Church. It was a panel, sort of a panel discussion. I think the clips I have are from a combination of questions after the panel, questions or comments after the panel. On the panel were, it was five people from the community. I should have written down their names because I'm kind of blanking. Vanessa Lynch was on there, a student from Smith College talking about what things she'd organized on campus at Smith College. And Elisa Klein was on there. Police Chief Russell Sinkowitz was on there, as well as the DA, David Sullivan, and Whitney Baptiste, I'm not sure the last part of her name, who's a professor at UMass. The sound quality on these clips is a little
shaky.
The audio system at Edwards Church is a little difficult to hear, but hopefully you can understand. This is, I think Sharnice is a student from Smith College.
Because now we are coming back this semester, and we are going to make sure that everybody is aware and that we don't ever feel invisible or not wanted or like we're in a swarm of people who are better than us.
Don't be afraid of young people. The movement that happened in the 50s was young people. Elders. What the movement is about. It's real. It's you young people, believe in the Ferguson movement, not just Ferguson, the Ferguson movement.
As a person of color, I really continue to be really deeply disturbed by this ongoing and consistent violence against people of color. And one of the, what I believe to be one of the causes of that, a major contributor to that, is that we as people of color are not really seen, we're not seen in our full humanity. So I feel like what we need to do is to really figure out what is to get underneath that deep fear that would motivate somebody in that instant to create this act of violence that would kill somebody of color. And I think it has to do with the fact that, and I think someone on the panel mentioned that there is conscious bias and unconscious bias. And I think that we really run the risk, especially, and I'll say this, if white people take a look at their conscious bias and attempt to address it, and not take a look at the associations that are a subconscious. Because we get these messages thrown at us from everywhere. And the other thing that was mentioned a number of times is that we need to raise up the narrative of Black Lives Matter, that voices, people of color, aren't being heard. And I think that Mr. Trent Sullivan mentioned that he didn't know or didn't have a sense of what the experience is of people of color. So I want to know, how are we going to do this exchange where we can actually have opportunities for those voices to be heard and received, and for some of this subconscious bias and association to be unearthed?
I'm not sure who that speaker was, sorry, but I believe the next one is Vanessa Lynch speaking from the panel.
So I have another statistic for you and for all of you, which is that every 28 hours in this country, a black person is killed by police or vigilantes. I think that especially when we have a majority white police force, but for me, I do not call the police when I have an emergency. I do not feel safe with police, and I don't feel more safe if it's a black or brown police officer who are actually often have internalized their own racism and can be even worse than some of these white officers. So I don't feel safe with a more black police force or more black women in the police force. That's not cutting it for me. I want to know why and the police are allowed to continue to police the police. And judges and DAs and everyone can kind of go in a corner and make sure that justice is not seen. So for me, if we're talking about systemic racism and systemic white supremacy, then we need a total systemic overhaul. So that's what I think.
People in the system that can, you can make a phone call to and change something, then you
power center. I want my children to go to school with those kind of folks. And so toward that end, I say that just having people in the system is not enough. When you don't have anyone in the system that can respond to these needs. When a black life doesn't matter to the extent that it is automatically seen in a system that a black person isn't supposed to defend themselves against folks who are aggressive and trying to hurt them, can you call the DA and say, DA, this shouldn't go down like this? Or will the DA say, well, that's justice? So, that happened. Legitimate uses of authority are often justified by folks who, not on purpose, see white supremacy as the cause for the system. In other words, if a police officer has to kill somebody, it's justified because this person wasn't white. Now, what it takes, well, this person wasn't white, what it takes is people with those levers of authority to be sensitive to that, to open their ears to that. And what it takes is for people who hear the chants of Black Lives Matter to put people in those positions that respond to that. Now, towards that end, this only works when a couple of things are kept in order. I've heard good things of the Northampton Police Chief. I'm messing with the name, so I'll say Chief Russell. I've heard great things about you. But it should be troubling to any and everyone who's a citizen that the police who are charged with enforcing the laws, interpreting the values of what laws are important and not, and ultimately making, or the ability to make decisions about what lives matter. When those police are uncoupled from the elected officials that are charged with giving them their instructions, if they can go unchecked, that a police chief can untangle themselves from the subservience of the city council, then not just black lives are in jeopardy. That's everybody's life. So I'll say the practical application of what it means to be seen by the system, valued by the system, and de facto change the system requires a vigilant eye by everyone, black people, brown people, white people, everyone who's a part of the system, to see when things are not told, things are not done, things are not encouraged for everybody. I don't mean to pick on you, Mr. Sullivan, but we just saw a great example of spinning facts that are unnecessary. Make violent social change inevitable. None of us know that. All of us are fighting, struggling to figure out ways to non-violently make sure that what must happen happens, and that is all of us have our say in the system we're all a part of. It becomes blatant when roadblocks are put up in our way. It can't be denied. And I wanted to say that. And I respect everyone on the panel. Thank you.
Here on the local level, I think what everyone in the room knows is that we have these instances of racism within the immediate community. And what I want to ask the panel to just ask this, the question this way, to frame it very locally, if anyone on the panel would be willing to give examples of what they see immediately here in the Northampton, Amherst, Hadley, or even just Western Mass in general.
Someone who hasn't spoken.
Okay.
Someone who hasn't spoken.
There is somebody named Jonas who was attacked. I also know of friends who have been arrested for resisting arrest. Friends from Apollyon, Black women who have been approached by police for doing nothing, essentially, and being arrested for resisting arrest. My best friend at Smith College was arrested for getting beat by her roommate by the Northampton. Her roommate hit her, and when they came, they saw her as the aggressor. Her roommate was a white woman, and she was black. And she was arrested, and she stayed there overnight because she was the aggressor.
That was some of the courts. We're looking into what kind of training that takes
maybe
part of the brain as it describes it to deal with the implicit racism. More and with the developer experience and through their personal context, social recovery. The early stage stuff, but it's that kind of progressive look outside the box, find out what's out there to make our people be better, be more sensitive, be more empathetic, and really.
But while that training, while you're researching that training, what's the guarantee that your cops are not going to meet or incarcerate or kill us?
Yeah.
If the DA could also respond to the question, I would really appreciate it.
That was a question posed by Vanessa Lynch to Chief Russell Sinkowitz and the DA, David Sullivan, all people on the panel together.
And I think I wanted to say that when I was at the November rally on Main Street, we heard loud and clear.
Sorry, I guess we didn't get an answer to this question. Now it's Andrea Avazian giving the closing.
This is not a moment, this is a movement. And so, I worry that white people like me will get fired up today and go home and go back to sleep. I'm worried that we will be episodic in our endeavors to dismantle institutional racism.
Oh, so that's just about the end. No, actually, so after the event at Edwards Church, when I was just standing around waiting to talk to people, all of a sudden I heard, I didn't even hear this. I heard this when I was going through my recordings later. So, I'm not sure who that was or where that came from, but that was recorded or live.
Editor's note. After the radio show, my friend Deirdre Muccio called to let me know that that was Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Anyway, this is Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Dwayne Rainey is also here in the studio with me. Thanks for listening. Something else I wanted to share is a few things from a column that Vijay Prashad wrote in the Gazette talking about the problem. He says the problem isn't between police and the public, but between the country and its rich. He says, On the one side, you see public school teachers having to deal with problems far outside the ambit of education. They must be part-time teachers and part-time social workers, having to try and solve as best they can the family crises that spill over into the classroom. On the other side, you see police officers who are called in routinely to solve problems of poverty and psychological trauma. The teachers have borne their new burdens with the kind of empathy and warmth that is typical of the temperament of those who go into their profession. And he says, as long as the rich maintain their general strike against taxes and as long as private corporations refuse to invest in decent jobs in the United States, it's on the shoulders of the public teachers and the police that the crisis will rest. The real adversary of the police isn't those who speak out for justice for the lives of people killed unjustly. The real adversary is a system that hoards wealth and refuses to let people breathe. So, what else do I have?
Clips from this morning.
Yes, I have clips from this morning, and that actually do have some to-do action item kinds of things. So this morning I was thinking about, so what can people in Northampton do to fight racism? And I was downtown this morning with my recorder, so I asked people.
Any ideas that people have on ways to fight racism in Northampton? Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, and I'm actually late for a meeting.
Okay, thanks anyway.
Sorry.
No problem. What do people have about ways to fight racism in Northampton?
Good question. Very good question. I don't know, you know, I feel like one of the main reasons I live here is because I feel like, you know, pretty much most people who live here are pretty tuned in, you know. So, I don't know. What do you think, man? Do you have any ideas? Do you feel that, you feel like... I mean, I'm sure they're always lingering. I'm sorry, she's got to get to school. So
okay.
I wish I had something a little more concrete to say.
No, I mean, that's part of the thing. It's like, we don't really know, so I'm just...
Well, you've left me thinking about it, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, we live in such a predominantly white city that it's like, there aren't... It's a really good question.
Yeah, I think a lot of us white people struggle with that because it's like we don't know what we don't see.
Yeah, I think that's maybe the big factor there. It's just like, I know that, like, definitely the thoughts are of, like, Springfield and Holyoke being, like, kind of separate from us in a way. Like, I don't know, it's like this weird, like, divide. I don't know.
Wait, so we can fight racism in Northampton. Is there anything you'd like to say?
It's a pretty liberal town.
I think there was any racism in Northampton.
Yeah, take a minute. Yeah, that's a hard question.
That is a hard thought. I'm a teacher too, so like, I mean, I think the best way really would be just to educate, you know, and to see differences and that we're all the same, but we're all can add something positive to everything.
Is there anything in your teaching that you've done that you feel like
we teach? So in my reading class, we do a lot of like just different novels, so like different cultures. So to appreciate, like, you know, everything, and also to appreciate what we put people through, like including for, like, the Holocaust. We read a book called Letters from Rivka, and it's about a girl from Russia who's coming over to America, and it's all the like hardships that she's endured and what people just did to her, you know, people. Which is pretty horrible. Night John from Gary Paulson. It's about a black slave, and the things that he went through was absolutely like, it's like very, it paints a awesome picture in a sense, like just how bad it was for them. So, but I think, yeah, education is probably the best way to do it.
When people like initiate conversations, when like I hear white people initiate conversations about like whether or not they're racist. Uh-huh. I feel like people like to think about, like, oh, what I would do in a really dramatic situation, you know, like, oh, there was this one time that maybe, you know, it's like, I think that one of the biggest things is just to acknowledge that racism is often really subtle, and that, like, it's really important for white people to confront one another, and also to acknowledge their own racism, because we all are racist to some degree, and it's just something to work on. I mean, it is institutionalized. It's in all of us. Confronting ourselves honestly and having honest conversations with other white people is just a really important direction forward for me personally. I didn't grow up in an all-white place. You know, right? I mean, like, I say an all-white place. It's just like a very white town. Friendships with people of color don't come easily to me here the way they did when I was growing up. It's a really different landscape. What it means to be an ally just feels different here. Do you have any more questions you want to ask me?
No, I think that's it. When I was talking to people this morning, I asked about maybe 10 people, I think, sort of randomly. Mm-hmm. Seven men, three women, three people of color that were waiting for the bus in Pulaski Park. Maybe 5 out of 10 people had something to say. I mean, mostly just like, kind of like, huh, what? That's a good question. The people of color declined comment. I didn't know, like, I was kind of self-conscious or hesitant asking them, because it's like, I know as a white person, you're not supposed to expect people of color to educate you on racism. So part of me was like, oh, should I ask them? And part of me was like, well, I don't want to, like, ignore me either. So I felt really self-conscious about that. Like, I don't know, I just felt really, like, really stressed out about that, you know, in terms of, like, my own, like, racism or ignorance about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that that's an important way to be self-aware. But I think, too, like, you know, you might find somebody that really, like, invites that conversation, because I feel like we're not having it.
Yeah.
You know, the important thing is to make mistakes.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah.
Like, you know, I think, yeah, if there's any one way to combat racism, it's just to, like, not be afraid to make mistakes. And when you do, to talk about it honestly. You know, and to, like, not judge each other for it.
I'm just remembering how terrified I was when I started my radio show about making mistakes and saying the wrong thing, like saying something offensive or ignorant or not more okay with it. Uh-huh. I guess the more you do something, though, you know, if you make a mistake 5% of the time, I mean, as long as you're active, saying stuff, that's 5%, the mistake, the 5% of the time can get understood in context, whereas if you don't do anything because you're afraid to make a mistake, people will never know who you are or where you're coming from.
Yeah, for sure.
And isn't the first battle in our hearts and minds, you know, it's not even about Northampton, it's about, like, each one of us individually really keeping an eagle eye on ourselves and not falling into patterns of fear, I guess. Mm-hmm. Everything in life reduces to fear, right?
Yeah.
That's my spur of the moment thought.
Yeah, appreciate that.
I know, it's funny, like Northampton, it's such a bubble. I grew up in New York City. When I go back there and I get on the subway car, and I just feel like this sigh of relief. Just, I look around the subway car and there's no like one thing. There's no, like, normal. It's just mm-hmm. like a range, and that just feels so mm-hmm. wonderful. And of course, you know, we don't have that. Just that.
The ideas.
So after talking with a lot of people who, like me, weren't exactly sure what to do, then I figured, well, I'll go to the computer and do a web search. I do web searches on how to do lots of things, so I put in to Google how to fight racism, and lots of great things came up. I recommend it. There was also a sheet that Alyssa Klein was passing out at the MLK Day event with things that we can do. Like a lot of people said, education is pretty important. So many different ways of educating, whether it's reading books or articles or going to talks or seeing movies, talking with friends, lots of listening. Particularly listen to and trust people of color when they talk about their experiences of racism and defer to their expertise on the subject. You can support or join the local Greenfield-based group, Mass Slavery Apology, massslaveryapology.org, that works to build public acknowledgement of the legacy of slavery and provide resources for racial justice efforts. Many other online resources and organizations, such as beyondwhiteness.com, conspireforchange.org, go on and on. In Most of us probably have places of work. I know in my place of work, one of the things we did was we had someone come in that does anti-oppression audits, and we had a workshop with them to brainstorm, or just to open ourselves up to the discussion and brainstorm action items, ways to be allies. One of the things we came up with was setting aside a 20-minute segment every time we have our monthly meeting to talk about social justice issues. And I think we started doing that maybe a year and a half ago. And it's been a real challenge because there haven't always been people stepping up to lead that. And it's definitely something that we need to work on. Anyway, thanks for listening. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Past shows of Out There can be listened to online on the archives at weatherbeard.com/Ruthie. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock. But here's a promo for another show on Valley Free Radio.
Wednesday nights, you might tune in to the Warm Heart of Africa to hear the funky, sinuous rhythms of Afrobeat. Or the pulse of Algerian rhyme music. Or the desert trance of Tuareg blues. Or Township Jive from Johannesburg. Or catchy soukous beats from the Congo. Those are just a few examples of what you might hear from 7 to 9 every Wednesday night right here on Valley Free Radio. Join me, your host, DJ Vinyl Scratch, on The Warm Heart of Africa, a celebration of African and Afro-diaspora music, culture, and history, delivered with a groove.
There's actually one more thing, announcement I wanted to make. If you go to the jobsnotjails.org website, there's an what's called an Act to Increase Neighborhood Safety and Opportunity. It's a bill that they're trying to get co-sponsors for. I don't have time to go into it all right now, but it's really great, I think, to repeal mandatory minimum drug sentences, reduce certain low-level felonies and misdemeanors, end collateral sanctions with the RMV, and a few other things. Anyway, that's at the jobsnotjails.org website.